Blog Talk Radio.
His name's President Obama. He's striving to make jobs for your mama. And though you're the family of the U.S. of A. When it comes to the election, what you vote gonna say? He's helping by giving out some money. He wants to help make a stronger economy. He's thinking about protecting everyone's health. He wants to make you safe and secure your wealth.
President Obama. President Obama.
Yeah.
It's President Obama.
Keep it moving forward.
What the heck is going on in this country? I am not going to listen to the Bob and Tom Show. We are waiting for Mr. Eric to arrive in the studio. While we're waiting, we're going to talk about what's going on here with the government shutdown and by the appointment. I had to send out to people with staff today and one bothered to call me and tell me. So we have to speak. Yesterday, I had a great opportunity to hear author and anti-race activist Tim Weiss speak at Hamlin University's commitment to community. Each year, Hamlin University brings in a variety of great diversity and people that come in and deal with the very hard issues. It's something that they do once a year, and I mean, it's great. It's okay. But I took a picture with him and talked to him, and I wrote an article in the Hamlin University Oracle newspaper called If Tim Wise was Black. And he liked it. He even autographed the article, so I was pretty happy with that. But anyway, getting on with the show, I received some really strange emails today from the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority. It makes me wonder what's going on and if we're even going to have a stadium in downtown Minneapolis. And so while I pull that up and patch some things through here, let me just do that. We'll be talking about that. And we'll also be talking about, you know, how does the government shutdown affect you, if it does at all? Phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And the question that we have is, does the government shutdown affect you? Has it affected you in any way? Or, I mean, what's going on out here? What is the real situation that we're dealing with? Because I know that a lot of the government employees are furloughed right now. The IRS in downtown Minneapolis, you can't get your tax prepared. And again, I had a meeting with people at Al Franken's office today at 1:30, and no one even bothered to call me to tell me that the meeting was canceled. And I understand, you know, the person that set it up was actually on vacation. She works with another agency, but, you know, it was terrible. Oh, hey, guess what? I have an email here. It says, sorry to reach out to you via business website, but I wanted to make sure to connect with you regarding the meeting we have scheduled this Wednesday to discuss some outreach. Unfortunately, the likelihood of government shutdown, I'm emailing to say that I may have to cancel our meeting this Wednesday. As a resolution in Washington, D.C. is reached prior to Wednesday, then absolutely I look forward to a meeting. However, the federal government is still shut down, and of course, I will not be able to meet. That was the email that I received, which was interesting because I didn't get a phone call, and that's kind of troubling to say the least. But, you know, things happen. The government shut down. I mean, we don't really know why it shut down, what's going on. And other than it has something to do with some money somewhere that someone's playing with. And we really need to take a close look at this and what's going on. Again, that telephone number is, let me get back there. You can call us. The phone lines are open at this point. And I would love to hear from you at 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Let me just do that all over again because I just really screwed that up. 347-426-3904. And the phone lines are open. We're going to return shortly right after this message. Actually, we're going to play some music and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yeah, Don, I'm looking at some information coming in on the teletype. What's up?
Okay, yeah. Well, no, we're looking, we're just talking about the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, which I received an email not too long, October 2nd here, not too long ago. It says they've rescheduled the meeting on Thursday, October 3rd, 2013 at 5 p.m. The board will be voting on the stadium development and use agreement. As the board It says, as the board meeting is much later than usual, the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority will hold a media briefing prior to this meeting. As a condition of attending the meeting, we ask that those who attend embargo the information until the board meeting has begun.
What is that supposed to mean?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. It says... we ask, as a condition of attending the meeting, we ask those who attend embargo the information until the meeting has begun. Is this Mr. Ziggy Wolf, Mr. Edwards, pulling out?
I'm not really at liberty to say. I mean, I've never heard a terminology as it pertains to the dissemination of information, Don. I'm not quite sure. Embargo until the... until the meeting has ended? Is that what, or?
It says, as a condition of attending our meeting, we ask that those who attend embargo the information until the board meeting has begun, which means that, well, you know what it means, but it says you can't tell anybody or don't distribute the information until after they go into their meeting.
Yeah, then you stealth the information. Yeah, I mean, we stealth it. Capsulize it, put it in a bottle, and float it in the ocean. But I don't understand, because everybody has been told here in Minnesota that the lease agreement is a done deal. The licensing and all the other gratuities, if you will, are a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not quite understanding. I mean, is there some problem that's emerged or what?
I would gather that there's something serious getting ready to go down. And of course, we can't get those people on the phone that need to contact us and have that conversation. But by the looks of this, let me just see here. Yeah, it was sent at 4:41 p.m. 3 hours ago by Jennifer Hathaway, their PR person. And so, I mean, just by the looks of what's going on, there's something serious happening. And we need to probably get into that and find out. So.
Well, maybe during the course of a program there, you and Studio A, maybe you can check to see what the two major white newspapers here in the state are printing. I mean, what are they saying for tomorrow morning's edition of their paper, though theoretically you wouldn't think that they would have any information if there's been some kind of rupture, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Rupture of relationship, breakdown in negotiations, and et cetera. But, you know, we're just speculating. I mean, we're guys on the outside just merely speculating. I assume that everything is a done deal. I assume that when the Vikings flew back into to Minnesota to Winter Park, their practicing facility out there in Edina, I imagine Ziggy came on in and acquired his usual suite at Downtown Hotel, and I assume that Ziggy's been here and they've been meeting, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, 49 minutes ago, the Star Tribune released the Vikings.
You're breaking up real bad, Don. I think it's this electricity and lightning we got going on right here in over the Twin Cities.
Yes, just 49 minutes ago, the Star Tribune.
Can't hear you, Don. Can't hear you. Can't hear you. You're breaking up.
Let me try something else here. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Nope,
hello?
Nope. That's nothing but static, Don. Nothing but static.
Worse.
Yeah.
Hello?
Bad reception. We got major thunderstorms. Yeah.
Okay,
I can't hear you, man. You're really breaking up, and this is important that we, get this out here with clarity and open the phone line.
Yes, it is.
So, yeah, okay, you switched to something else there. I see you in Studio A.
Yes.
You seem like you're on another frequency? Okay.
Yes. Can you hear me now a little bit better?
Yeah, I can hear you now, Don. It's clear.
Okay.
It's clear,
perfect,
Don.
Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect. Yes. Okay. And it is lightning and stuff over here in Studio A. But what I was going to tell you is, let me just go back here and find this, Mr. Airbus.
Well, here's the question I asked before the static hit us. I assume that Ziggy Wilf and the leadership of the Vikings, the owners, in other words, I assume they came back in with the team. And maybe he did a stopover in New Jersey, for change of clothes and et cetera. So I have to assume he's been here since Tuesday, right, and been at the negotiation table?
Yeah, well, the story on the Star Tribune that was released 49 minutes ago.
Oh, there we are.
Says the Viking City of Authority close to completing agreements. It says attorneys representing the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority and the Minnesota Vikings worked into the night Wednesday, putting the final touches on the lease development agreement for the team's new downtown Minneapolis stadium. The use agreement, which is expected to bind the team to a new stadium for at least the next 30 years, will detail terms of the team's lease with the authority. Approval of the agreement is necessary before the Vikings can firm up their financing with the project. And so I guess they're going to...
Well, wait a minute, Don. Let's just hold there for a second with respect to that press release that was put out, or that information put out by the Star Tribune, who is a developer in this project also. They make some observations which I'm not sure I'm clear on. I thought all of that. What was that last paragraph there, Don?
Approval of the agreements is necessary before the Vikings can firm up their financing for the project.
Now, that's puzzling, because prior to this, there's never been any real indication, though there have been some signals and some red flags in the last 10 or 12 days, but we've never been told as the general populace that there's problems with the sports authority in the state of Minnesota and the city of Minneapolis' end of the funding responsibility and obligations. I thought that was all on Ziggy Wolf. That's why they went out and had a big forensic audit and examination of his fiscal portfolio and et cetera. Now they're saying they can't go forward, Don, because when we were saying that months and months ago that it was imperative that that lease agreement be consummated way back, in August damn near, that, we were kind of held up to ridicule on this program here in Minnesota. Now the Star Tribune says that's all this is contingent to make sure that the Sports Facility Authority and, the Minnesota, the city of Minneapolis, need that agreement? I'm not understanding. I thought their money was in place.
Yeah, that's what it's basically saying here, that they're, that the Vikings said they hope to have their financing in place by early November in time for ceremonial groundbreaking east of the Metrodome.
Okay.
The story is very cryptic, and just it's like 1, 2, 4, 4 or 5 paragraphs, and you're looking at it and you're saying like, wait, how is the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority going to vote on anything? First of all, they didn't let the people of Minneapolis vote on anything, and so.
Well, no, but let's I have to defend the Metropolitan, the Sports Facility Authority, because the legislature gave them the power to sign off and consummate on behalf of the state and the taxpayers and the same people that didn't get a chance in Minneapolis to vote one way or the other. That's what the Sports Authority is, allowed to do. And that is a kind of advising consent, if you will, doctrine, that is contingent upon concurrence by the Minnesota Vikings and, most importantly, Mr. Wilf and his ownership group, which is basically comprised of him and his brother and one other brother, and then there is an African American, by the way, who has a 5% interest, has had it since Ziggy bought the team way back in 2005. But I'm getting a little uneasiness, because there doesn't seem to be the comfort level from the Minneapolis Star Tribune that it's a done deal. Did you misread anything in the article, Don? Is there some misgivings?
I'm reading the whole article. It's right here. This is approval for the agreement is necessary before the Vikings can firm up their financing for the project. I'm looking at it right here in black and white, released for at 7:45 p.m. today by Richard Merihu.
Richard Merihu. Now, that's interesting, 7:45 now. So he also says in the article that the Vikings and the Sports Facility Authority are negotiating into the night. How could that be negotiating into the night when he posts at 7:45 p.m. Central Standard Daylight Saving Time that this is supposed to happen? So when did the negotiations ended and everything is okay?
No, I have no idea. I'm just looking at this this fiasco, because, you know, before this one, they had Stadium Authority postpones vote on key agreements. The next one, states move forward with plans for Viking Stadium bond issue. Before that, Governor Dayton wants Vikings to pony up significant equity in new stadium. And before that one, Stadium Authority releases findings on wealth audit. And before that, Party Plaza near Metrodome at the center of a stadium dispute. Yeah. And before that, Minneapolis City Council signs off on Viking Stadium design. And before that, I'm just going to go down the list here. The authority is back in dispute over land near Viking Stadium. And before that, simple projects, substantial progress made on audit by Viking Stadium Authority. And before that, Vikings deliver Wolf financial data to Stadium Authority. And I thought they said that he didn't deliver anything to them, and they were kind of upset because they weren't contacting him. But yeah.
Well, they kind of like two ships passing in the night. I mean, they kind of made a mistake there because he was delivering the data that they were asking for. There was kind of the word's been so popular since the government shutdown, glitch, kind of like the whole insurance exchange situation that the Republicans, your buddies there, Don, were beating up on yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was a glitch, if you will, according to the Star Tribune and them, that they misunderstood about the availability and the dissemination of the information by the Wilfs to the Sports Facility Authority. Looked like they got that all, you know, straightened around. And then you remember the forensic audit firm, big international firm, came back and clean bill of health. But see, here's what I'm puzzled by. I'm told that Mr. Wilf, Ziggy Wilf, has not actually been back at the table since this whole fiasco, and that he has put everything in the hands of his attorneys. Now, I would think that the Star Tribune, that Mr. Merihu, would have had been able to tantalize us a little bit here about, 1 hour ago, with some, you know, indication of some of the goodies that are coming out of this stadium agreement, right?
Yeah, I would agree.
But you
I
say
would
there's hope. Nothing there in the article that implies that.
And there's nothing in the article that implies that at all whatsoever. And I'm just kind of looking around here to see if there's any more stuff. No, that's it. The Viking Stadium Authority close to completing agreements.
Okay, at about, and it'll be announced at 5 o'clock Central Standard Time tomorrow afternoon there in the Halsey Hall Room, right?
Yes,
but
sir.
The stadium has asked that a certain stipulation be imposed on all those who attend a meeting. Does that mean we sign a loyalty or a truth oath? If you decided to go tomorrow, you'd have to sign an oath that you would maintain the embargo. Is that the right word? Again, I don't
The right word.
Embargo is something you normally put on nations when they're warring, like the Syrians. You know, we got an embargo on the Syrians. Okay. Mm-hmm. But an embargo on the information. Okay. Now, let me get this correct. I know the older guy's kind of slow. They're indicating before they formally go into session, I assume it'll be the public portion, that they will brief the attendees. That's right. Is that correct? Is that what I should believe? That they will brief the attendees on something, okay?
Yes.
But they are requesting that not be revealed. Like, you know, grab your cell phone, call your editor, call your paper, call your TV station. Until when, Doc? I mean, when? What is the timeline?
It doesn't really. Mr. Edwards, it does not have a timeline. And I am actually pulling that up again to see if there's any other things she might have emailed that I looked over. No, and there is actually nothing that I have there.
Well, I mean, what's the purpose of an embargo? Maybe just give the phone number. Maybe some, you know, legal types. Maybe Doug Mann or someone who's got a case still pending. Maybe they can help us out here because, you know, really, maybe we're, you know, not that bright. But it would seem that if I'm going to impose a embargo, in other words, silence any statements or et cetera until they've been properly authorized, look like I would do that after the formal meeting.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Now, of course, if the Mormon Tabernacle Choir is going to come out just prior to the meeting tomorrow at 5 singing Hallelujah, and Michelle and Ted Mondale and them say, we have an agreement, you know, and in other words, you know, it's kind of like back in the old days of NASA and et cetera. I mean, you know, we have contact, you know, Houston. So I'm just trying to fix my mind around the sequential requirements here because I just don't know why you indicate that you will not reveal something that is told to you before the formal meeting starts. Now, there's also a couple of big contracts, well, not big, you know, what they call colored money contracts. There's that $750,000 that those 15 organizations are supposed to get, $750,000 to train, okay? Now, everybody said that's in the bag. Have those organizations been identified, Mr. Allen?
No, they have not. Miss Jennifer Hathaway has not emailed that list of individuals and organizations and the amount of money they're asking for. As I emailed her a request for information, and she felt that until the contracts are signed by the Vikings and approved, that that was private information at their discretion, period, and it was not media information.
And that's correct. That's correct, because we talked about that two programs ago, two Wednesdays ago. Though, as I pointed out on that program, everybody in town knows who these organizations are based on that representatives of the organization have appeared before the Sports Facility Authority, in both in formal meetings and in committee meetings and et cetera. So everybody, in town knows who these groups are. But, yeah, that contract is supposedly to be signed tomorrow. That's $750,000. That would allow for some, I guess, minimal training of African-Americans or Somalis or something. I think we tabulated that last 2 weeks ago, and I think it comes out of like about $50,000 per organization.
Yep,
yep. Yeah, okay. Well, there's nothing more we can do. Give that phone line number, Don, in case somebody wants to call and they have some observation or maybe they know something.
Yeah, that phone number here is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, I was just mulling around here, looking at my email, and I just have to share this with you because I'm really shocked at the Minneapolis public school system. Stan Allen, Chief Communications Officer, and he's a public person. His number is 612-668-0230. If you want to give him a call. He said 13 schools recognized by the Minnesota Department of Education for positive gains. And the Minneapolis
Public Schools. Was on the front. He said Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm not sure that wasn't the article on the front page of the Johannesburg Times/Minneapolis Star Tribune that talked about, I don't know what it was, Don, 27 schools in Minnesota shed labels for failing. Is that what that's about?
Yes, yes. Their schools like Armitage, Field, Wake Park, and Pratt, who reduced achievement gaps, including Wellstone and Harrison and Henry, and those are just downright damn lies, according to the numbers from the MCA 2 and MCA 3 test scores.
Yeah, I know. I know, and we talked about that about 4 weeks ago, read the information over the air after we had put pressure on to make the school district release the information. I'm a little puzzled by that, particularly in light of the attacks on the Teachers Federation. You know, we've got a big problem here right now with leadership, your leadership attacking the... And, of course, your friends, Don, now your buddies in the Republican Party have embraced the African-American Leadership Group and the African-American Summit and et cetera. And I think you have reported on website that they issued a statement from the desk of the executive committee?
Oh, the chairman of the Republican Party of Minnesota sent out an email to all the people on the listserv that said, you know, we stand in support of the African-American Leadership Forum on this position they're taking with education. And I was like, wow, they really sunk to a whole new level of stupidity, you know?
Now, that position of support was in response to the attack issued by the leadership of the organizations, the leadership conference or the alliance and the leadership ministerial and all of that, and the fact that they have been declared persona non grata and will not be able to enter the negotiation. In fact, we're on the verge probably of a strike here in Minneapolis public schools because the Federation in Minneapolis has asked for a state mediator.
Wow.
After 19 meetings with Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, which apparently have been extremely unproductive, and a total rejection of the union's 10-point plan for the reform, if you will, and rehabilitation of the Minneapolis public schools. I guess the Federation, rightly so, got tired of the shucking, jiving, you know, and et cetera. But this came at a time when a group of leadership education experts were attacking Lynn Nordgren, the president of the Teachers Federation, and this has created a firestorm amongst Democratic liberals, white liberals in this state who, you know, always kind of look out for, you know, for our leaders, and they are asking for an explanation on why this kind of attack was initiated and this kind of in negative engagement against the president of the Teachers Federation took place. Now, my understanding is that, and I understand we may have received some kind of cryptic email or something indicating that all of us with programs of communication were to stand down. And did you receive anything, Don, that we were to stand down from even discussing this matter over the air?
Oh, no, I haven't received anything like that. I mean, not that I pay any attention to it, but no, I haven't received anything like that, Mr. Edwards. Nothing.
And I looked in my communiques and text messages because I had been told that clearly the orders had come from on high and that there was to be no discussion. I know there had been, you know, at least one meeting with the superintendent, if you will, in an attempt to kind of get a lid on this thing, but it appears that a lot of damage has been done in the relationship between our quote-unquote community, African-American community, and the Teachers Federation. And I'm saddened by that because, you know, you would think that we should kind of be pulling together. In fact, I understand, Don, that let's put this date down, if you will, type it up, put it, link it out. On the 26th, which is a Saturday in the early afternoon, the Teachers Federation, who has their headquarters right in the heart of North Minneapolis, right there on Plymouth and Fremont or whatever, are having or hosting a parent meeting for the purpose of informing community about the latest, breach and problems. Again, that's the 26th of October in the afternoon. I think it's probably from noon to 2 or something like that. And they are hosting the event, and parents are invited. Apparently there will be food and babysitting services and et cetera. So I said, well, I'm not understanding how serious this is because I'm just not hearing anything from my leaders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and normally, you know, our leaders. But then when I was told that it had been ordered, I guess kind of like in the military, that everything would be suppressed, that there would be no discussion, if you will. KMOJ, the urban contemporary station, has been told to allow no discussion over their airwaves about this. And I was told that that we had been the Donnie and Ronnie show had gotten their marching orders, and I said, I don't think so. I said, but we'll test the waters because we'll sure talk about it. So the phone lines are open on this. I'm just trying to get a feel. What was it that the Teachers Federation did that brought about the raft of such powerful, powerful, powerful black leaders in my community?
Mm-hmm.
Anything being texted? Anything?
I am actually looking all over the place, and we just have crickets at this point, Mr. Edwards. Nothing but crickets.
A lot of crickets.
No one's saying anything about anything. And so, I understand, meeting with Burnham Superintendent Bernier Johnson is like meeting with the color nine. I mean, the color blue, or the number nine. And so, you just don't get any response. And so, I understand the frustration, but what was really baffled me still is the Republican action to the African-American Leadership Forum in Think. But I know what the Republicans' modus operandi, as you say, was for this, because they think if they go in, they're going to gain some more Republican votes.
Okay.
Republican candidates. And that's the only reason it's just total crap, Mr. Edwards. I know the people at the top of the food chain over there in the Minnesota GOP, the St. Paul office, and it's just smoke and mirrors right now. And, their doom will be spelled out in 2014 when that gubernatorial election happens. So,
we just certainly have to take a wait and see, if you will. But, I just think that the community has the right. Somebody to ring your phone there. We need to kind of know, what kind of shape are we in educationally, particularly as you pointed out a number of minutes ago. We were getting these false numbers now, stories being run on the front page of the Metro section here in our city, talking in terms of wonderful recovery, being able to meet the challenge of the achievement gap, whatever that's supposed to mean, being able to prevail, naming a selective group of schools who basically all are on the outer perimeter, if you will. And I'm just trying to get a feel. They had a meeting. They had a dang on this meeting I wanted to see. They had a meeting last night here in Minneapolis in which they were discussing the transfer of African-American students out of Northeast Minneapolis who had been bused over there for years, and particularly moving the entire colored enrollment of Sheridan to City View. They got to do something with City View. Basically a pretty, almost new school that just hasn't worked out. Had a couple charters in there that didn't work. But they had a meeting last night at Anwaten, which is way over there on the other side of the Kenwood community, okay, talking about the colored problem in Zone A, which is, north Minneapolis in that area. Now, why would you have a meeting way out at Anwaten talking about the colored problem in near North Minneapolis? I'm not understanding that. Don, can you help me a little bit with this one?
Well, they take that. That's a classic move by the Minneapolis Public Schools to this. Mr. Edwards, I think you would agree with me when I say that the parents in North Minneapolis, in that area where the schools are failing, where the kids are going, and there's no opportunities, they should be a part of the conversation. But what the school board will do, and the administration, they'll take, like you said, take the meeting over there to Anwaten, the other side of the Kenwood area, where the majority of the parents who have kids in these schools don't have access, especially in the black poor schools in North and South Minneapolis.
Yes,
and that's something they've done all the time. They are strategic about making sure that if they don't want something that referendum in 2008. You remember Greg Coleman, the punter for the Minnesota Vikings?
Sure, the punter for his wife was a deputy superintendent or something like that. Think she relocated down to Florida as a superintendent. But certainly I remember Craig and his lovely wife. Yeah.
Now,
what about it?
What happened? I remember 2008 in July, or actually in August at the Minneapolis Urban League, they had a meeting. Not one flyer was put out. Not one thing on KMOJ was put out.
Yeah.
And all the people that were at this meeting, Mr. Edwards, except for me, were supporters of the referendum. So they had
and by extension, I think you were also supporters of the covenant, which was being negotiated at that very exact time. Go ahead.
And so I'm looking at this. And I looked at Coleman. I said, "Greg, do you really support a referendum for the Minneapolis public schools? Like the kids are failing?" He goes, "Yeah." I'm like, "Man, I was looking ignorance right in the face that day, Mr. Everidge."
Yeah. Greg Coleman, and his wife. But his wife was a high-ranking employee. In fact, she was assigned to manage, if you will, coordinate the covenant, because the covenant was very much tied to the past referendum, and no one even talks about what happened to that money. And by the way, on the issue of referendum, you know, there's another referendum on the ballot for this November. Yeah, they need some more money, okay? And they had really basically shut the community out of the process, though they have to have, I think they have to have at least two meetings the remainder of this month. They have to have a couple meetings, too, for you parents out there that are listening and don't feel that you want to call in, but they're having a couple of meetings on discipline. And one of the things that's so troubling about that is that the Teachers Federation in this firestorm that has grown out of this dispute with the quote-unquote black leadership, the union had proposed a very innovative approach to reducing expulsions and suspensions and et cetera. And don't you know that was rejected and attacked by our black organization?
Wow.
Yeah, and for those that want to scream and say, "Oh, man, they're on there talking like some Republicans making things up," go to the Teachers Federation's website. Their 10-point proposal is right there, okay? Right there. You know, now the other thing that's coming out, you know, everybody's kind of asking, what is the relationship to this group out of Cincinnati that was founded by the Koch brothers, Walmart Foundation, and the Gates Foundation, a couple, I think it's something called Excellent America or something like that. And their agenda is to, you know, make the Minneapolis public schools into just a charter school oasis. embrace America's new vision of what the future of education will be, where the elite get educated. It's old. It's not new. It's something that emerged in England in the early 1700s and continued for a long time until social upheaval in England. But it's educate the elite, Dot. Educate the elite and just train like little monkeys the rest of the populace.
and, you know, I'm actually, Mr. Edwards, I'm going to have to call the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers tomorrow because I think I told you this on last Wednesday. I took the Minnesota Teachers Licensure Exam.
Sure.
And so I did great in math, great in reading and writing and math. I didn't pass the math part of it. But something has to be addressed with this test because they were asking questions. The test is, this is why there is very few African-American male and female teachers new coming up.
Mm-hmm.
The test, you know, we have to read white literature in college. We have to read white literature when we go through the school of education in different places. And I got up there and I sat the test, and my first question was, Hitler was moving this way in this direction for this country.
Oh,
How does this benefit Hitler? Yeah, A, B, C, or D. I'm like, what the hell am I coming here taking a test? And they got questions about the Nazis and Hitler.
Is that right? In a Minnesota educational examination?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Test is put on by a company called Pearson's.
Okay.
And it really needs to be looked into because I've talked to several candidates for master's degree in teaching and education. They said, you know, we've taken that test 6-7 times and haven't passed it yet.
You know, that's we used to do this in the old days with the when we were at the University of Syracuse involved in the war games with the CIA and et cetera. You know, that's called subliminal conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's part of the good seminal, you know, But, you know, I would suggest, Mr. Allen, in that you have had a direct relationship with the test and the results have been negative, I would suggest that you need to contact tomorrow the State Human Rights Department and as well as the State Department of Education, those two institutions, state institutions, and I would file a complaint.
Oh, yeah.
I would ask for an audit of the test, to determine if it's free of bias. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's what we used to do in the old days before, you know, folks used to say, you know, sick and tired of these 1960-style activities. Let's give that phone number again, man, because we're coming down to the last 15 minutes. Maybe, you know, the rain and lightning has scared a lot of people, but I'm just fascinated that we get into, you know, conversations and questions about things so important to the survival of the African-American, such as education of African-American children, et cetera. And no one has any observation. I mean, are can we be heard, Don? Or
we're broadcasting live, Mr. Edwards, but that is the systemic failure in America, okay? And there's so many levels that we would need, like, 36 to 72, maybe a whole week of Blog Talk Radio time to explain it to people.
But right.
If we could just take a little piece of it, let's go back to 2008, okay? In 2008, a group of wealthy white men screwed off $12 trillion in 18 months.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
That's why we had our financial crisis. Now, no one did anything to these elite white men. No one even said that it was white men that did it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mr. Edwards, if me and you, if we were the elite black men and that we were rolling in dough, we could be on this earth 500 years making $200 million a year, we would never make $12 trillion.
Yeah, and let me just say on that particular piece, Don, again, for our listening audience, both locally, domestically, and internationally, you know, 60 Minutes did a piece on what Mr. Allen just talked about, the secret parallel Wall Street fund, and actually there was $16 trillion that was hid in that fund. And I can well remember when that story broke because I think many of us thought that if Barack Obama was to win the presidency of the United States, which he did, and whoever he selected as Attorney General, of course we know that he selected Eric Holder, that there were going to be some heads rolling and et cetera. Well, God forbid, no sooner did President Obama, you know, take the oath of office, he hired two of the primetime Wall Street operatives. One to head up his Treasury Department, the other one to be his advisor on economic plans, economic development, and et cetera, and there was never any penalty. You know, people don't even talk about that investigative report by 60 Minutes, as Mr. Allen has said, back in 2008, where they uncovered the existence of a parallel Wall Street stock market existence. $16 trillion of people's money was being abused, and I think Mr. Allen has said that at least $12 trillion of that was lost in that period of time from late 2007 until this nation almost crashed on the rocks in 2008. In fact, I'm afraid that we're going to have a real problem with the debt ceiling as well as default, because I think that the Republicans, I have to say, Mr. Allen, your associates, your friends are committed to a kamikaze attack. There's just no doubt about it. They are absolutely committed, if necessary, to destroy this country to make sure that this black man leaves no legacy whatsoever, other than, as some scholars are saying now, that he was merely a black man that got elected president and there hasn't been another one in 40 years. I mean, that's what we're heading towards. And I don't know. I see some very forbidding kinds of indicators out there with regards to the financial stability of this country. And I tell you, if they let this country go belly up behind both if both the debt et cetera comes into play, there won't be any budget for America.
No, there won't be any
budget, okay?
No, I can't think.
And I don't know what real agreements they made this afternoon in the meeting and in the White House, but it's quite clear that they are really pressuring Barack Obama to actually chip off his own legacy by agreeing to alterations, if you will, under the Affordable Care Act, who people don't even know when they talk about Obamacare that the Affordable Care Act is Obamacare and vice versa. I mean, it's fascinating to hear people. I guess one of the comedians, Jimmy Kimmel, or one of them did a thing last night on the streets of L.A., asked people the double question. Folks didn't have He said, well, what do you think about Obamacare? It's terrible. It shouldn't. It's unconstitutional, et cetera. He said, so what about Affordable Care? Greatest thing in the world. I mean, this nation has become so uninformed, Mr. Allen, that they just don't understand. This reminds me of George Orwell's book, 1984. Mm. Yeah. I mean, you got a lot of little people sitting in little rooms and things and deep underground bunkers and et cetera, man, and they're just – they're just sending stuff out left and right, man, and I just don't know if we have the clarity, the understanding of clarity, man. It's sad. In fact, it's frightening, okay, because it makes you understand that things could happen around you, and, you know, the trucks would roll up tomorrow morning and, you know, take you on out of the house to the camp or to the quarantine area, and you wouldn't have a clue what happened, and your neighbors wouldn't know that you was gone. What else you got, Don? Open that phone line. Phone line's open, man, you know.
Yeah, it's open. We got about 11 minutes left, and then the phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904.
Let's do this for the last minute, and that's apparently, you know, where a lot of folks' mindset is. And so now who's going to be our quarterback in a week and a half now? So when they play Carolina here, is it going to be Christian, or is it going to be the guy Castle from Kansas City that stumbled in here? You think Leslie Frazier has, you know, got the heart to go ahead and put Castle back in as starting quarterback? You know, Mr. Allen is not really my friend. Don is really not a sports guy, but I have to put him on the spot. So who are you pulling for, Don?
Well, I've been listening, but, you know, I would like to see Castle in because of the performance they had overseas just this last week. But, you know, I'm reading the news reports, and Leslie Frazier is telling, you know, the media that Pounder is the starting quarterback, period. There's no quarterback controversy that Pounder – and I think that that's kind of whipping out, because if this Castle can do what he did here, you know, then they won't end up being, you know, 8-1. You know, I mean, 1-8, I should say, by the time.
Well, I agree. I can't disagree with my colleague, and that is that I think that Castle has earned. See, here's the key. Matt Castle has earned the trust, of his teammates,
mm-hmm.
which is severely lacking as it pertains to Christian Ponder being under the ball, okay? And I just think you're asking for a full-scale rebellion and almost quitting. I mean, when I say quitting, I'm talking about quitting on the field of competition. Them boys ain't going to give up some checks, okay? But I just don't see how you take a chance of putting Christian Ponder, who is just an absolute disaster. I mean, his quarterback rating was down to something like 29, you know. I mean, average quarterback in the NFL is up around, you know, 95 to 100. The big boys like Peyton Manning there in Denver is up at around 135, 140, almost perfect, you know what I'm saying? Tom Brady in New England, 120, 125, I mean, you know, come on. So, is that a call coming in for us? Did you catch that, Don? Somebody called in, or you didn't cut them off in time? You still there, Don?
I am here, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah. Did you hear the music was being chimed in? I thought that was the national anthem of the NSA. Oops.
No. I was trying to. Someone had called in. I was trying to answer, and they had their stuff up too loud. I said, "Well, turn it down." I went back, and they clicked off, and so that's where I was at the time.
Oh, okay.
So hopefully they'll call back. We got 7 minutes left, and that number again is 347-426-3904. Call in. The phone lines are open.
Yeah, what we're on right now is that, you know, who should be the starting quarterback for the Carolina game Sunday after next? Should it be Matt Castle, who led the Vikings to victory in their home game in a place called London, England, Or should it be Christian Ponder, who has just kind of been a walking recipe for a walking disaster? But let me say this, you know, man, I tell you, that Adrian Peterson continues to be one of the greatest running backs of all time. You know, his performance in that game in London against the vaunted Pittsburgh Steelers, though the Steelers are down, you know, it's clear they're down talent-wise. There's some things that are not happening. But I tell you, if it wasn't for Adrian Peterson, even last year, that team would have probably been 3-13, not 10-6.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for Adrian Peterson right now, we could probably be looking forward to a 2-14 season. You know what I mean? But I just hope that Leslie makes the right decision, you know, if you will. But in closing, Don, we're down to the last 5 minutes. Just want to say to our friends and things out there that it looks like they're going to sign contract for your organizations to get a piece of the $750,000, not $750 million, but $750,000 package. And it looks like, according to what my associate, Mr. Allen, read, that should be on the agenda for, is it 5 o'clock, Don, as I understand it, 5 o'clock? A late meeting tomorrow.
Yes, sir, 5 p.m.
Yeah, in the Halsey Hall room there at the Metro. And so those contracts, want to say this again, reinforce it, the lease agreement will be signed. The licensing and other kind of remunerations and goodies and et cetera will, I guess, all be agreed to. And the $750,000 contract that we just talked about seconds ago, that's going to be going to 15 organizations, which I assume will be identified after 6 o'clock tomorrow, right?
Yeah, this is supposed to be a 2 minutes ago, Mr. Edwards, it said that Little Richard suffered a heart attack.
My man, Little Richard?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's you know, Tom Clancy, the darling of the right wing, you know, passed over to the other side earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Clancy, the great war writer, if you will, man who was most definitely loved by the right in this country for his, you know, writings and reflections on military and American conquest and et cetera. Now, what is the condition of Little Richard?
That's all. It's just a brief blurb there. They don't have any details.
Okay. Because Little Richard has got to be in his late 70s, if not early 80s, right?
Yeah, well, I think he'd be early 80s, actually. So.
That's what I'm kind of thinking. So we wish the best to the renowned longtime, you know, icon, if you will, of the R&B, Little Richard, who apparently has suffered a heart attack. I assume it was in his home, his hometown.
They don't even have that on here.
Oh, okay. They just didn't bother to put that in. I got you. Anything else, Don? What else we got as we go down the stretch here, the last 3 1/4? What else are we looking at that's going on in our...
Let me go back here because you'll find this interesting. Fox 9 News here locally called all the Minnesota congressmen and senators and asked them will they be being paid while the government is shut down. Senator Franken said he's going to donate his pay to charity. Senator Klobuchar says she's donating her pay to the NIH Foundation. Representative Congressman Walz donating pay to local food shelves. Representative Klein, no response. Congressman Paulson, not accepting pay. Congresswoman Betty McCullen, no response. Get this, Congressman Keith Ellison. The focus on congressional pay is an attempt to draw attention away from the issue. His noncommittal answer. And we keep going on, Bachman, Peterson, and Nolan all not accepting pay during this time.
Turn it down. Okay. Well, that's you know, seems to be commendable. It would seem that if government workers who basically don't make anything, particularly if you know the government pay structure, your GS 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, you know, until you start getting up there maybe around GS 13 or 14, these government employees, man, don't make any money. I mean, you know, people... These Republicans have fooled around and got people believing that, you know, government workers are making $75,000 and $80,000 being secretaries. That's just not true, man.
Well, Mr. Edwards, I would have to agree with you on that because here's what the Republicans are trying to do. And I've been aware of this for a long time. You know, in Washington, D.C., it has a large number of federal government employees, which is one of the same, of African-American.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Their thing is to break the back of D.C. and take Chocolate City out of Chocolate City, where most of these people are sustaining themselves, paying for their houses, buying cars, because they work
right.
for the federal government. So this is just another attempt at shutting that down, because if you go all the way back to the days of W.E.B. Du Bois, Frederick Douglass, and all those people that did things on behalf of the U.S. government and,
right.
and got African-Americans into the government, into those type of jobs, those the GS-4, you know, those high GS-16 and on up, where they're making really good money. You know, some of those people, they retire on that. So with that said, this is just another attack by this infrastructure to make sure that, you know, these dark-skinned people that, you know, got a president, we're just going to cut their legs off. So.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it, man. You're really seeing it. Well, okay, Don, look like we're wrapping it up. And so
yes.
we keep eye on what's your prediction? How many days are you predicting? 15 to 40 close down?
I think it's going to be done over the weekend, because President Obama can't have this to go on for more than a week. Is ridiculous. So any more than that, just he's burnt up.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm thinking possibility, if they don't get it reopened this weekend, mm-hmm. I'm calling anywhere from 20 to 30 days. Government
wow.
shutdown. Yeah.
Well, let's do a little song for Obama here on our closing.
His name's President
right.
Obama. He's striving to make jobs for your mama. And know you're all the family of the U.S. of A. When it comes to the election, what you're hoping to say? He's helping by giving out the money. He wants to help make a stronger economy. He's thinking about protecting everyone's health. He wants to make you safe and secure your wealth.
President Obama. President Obama.
Yeah.
It's President Obama.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Talk to you later, Mr. Edwards.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.